morning.
I hate being outsmarted by inanimate objects, especially simple ones. A computer program is one thing, but a piece of plastic? The other day I was perched in an awkward position with my hands full and trying to get a single pill out of a prescription pill bottle at the same time. My fault, I know. Just when I think I'm successful, I drop the lid to the bottle. Does it land at my feet and stay there? No, it bounces and rolls under a chair, ending up 4 feet from where it had fallen. So I have to put everything down and go in search of the lost lid, with both of my hands free so I can crawl on the floor. Have you ever been working on a car, or a carburetor, or a radio, or a sewing machine, or some appliance, anything like that? And you get down to the point as you're reassembling your project, where you have to put that special one-of-a-kind machine screw back where it goes. And it's really tricky to get it started, to properly avoid stripping the threads or cross-threading it, so you have to figure out how you're going to hold it with one hand or with a tool and start screwing it in with the other. Finally, you think you've conquered the situation, and you drop the screw. You hear that gentle tick as it hits the floor or the pavement, and then you hear another tick and another because it bounced somewhere. In your mind, you follow the sound, but you still have to put your tools down and start looking. You don't actually see where the screw went. This is when a drop cloth or a magnet on a stick would have been handy, of course, but you didn't think of that. So you begin searching, first with your eyes. You lay your head sideways against the floor or the driveway and scan for a silhouette, and pebbles dig into your temple. You feel with your fingertips. Where did it go? You need that specific screw, and that's the only one you have. Blood pressure starts to build, and a handful of expletives come into your mind, but you don't say them out loud because you don't want the screw to hear you. Secretly, you know that it ran away on purpose. It's smarter than you are. How irritating. Does this sound like an ancient widow who lost a silver coin, maybe? Sure, she has 9, but 9 won't help her retire her mortgage with that final payment that requires all 10. That silver coin is worth $60. Why in the world, she thinks, did she take the coins out of her purse and count them one more time in the first place? Hubris. It was silly and stupid and obsessive compulsive. Why in the world, she thinks, does she still have a dirt floor in her house? The coin must have buried itself in the dust somewhere. Where is my broom and dustpan, she thinks. Being defeated by an inanimate object, whether it be a bottle cap or a screw or a coin, is frustrating. You wish everything behaved more like a wet beanbag, so that when it landed, it stayed put right where it fell. Splat. But no, that's not how things work. Funny thing, animals are like that too. Dogs and sheep and human beings are like that. We never stay put. Leave us alone and we always go wandering. Just ask my wife how quickly she can lose me in Walmart or a hardware store. Our dog Jack has been lost a couple of times in his long dog career. It was never purposeful or malicious on his part, of course. A board in the back fence is damaged by a car going down the alley at night. And he wants to check it out. Yeah, I can squeeze through there, he thinks. Now, what's that smell? He walks. Ooh, another smell. He walks some more. Garbage. Say, some big dogs have come through here. Now, gosh, where am I? Meanwhile, Jan and I are panicking, and one of us is driving around in a car while the other one walks a beat through the neighborhood yelling Jack's name. We look earnestly for our beloved lost dog, but Jack follows his nose, which speaks louder to him than his ears do, and you never know where he might end up. He's focused on what's right in front of him, whatever has his attention, and that's it. A deliberate destination has never entered his mind. Sheep are no different. Ooh, there's some good grass over here. Say, there's some sweet clover I see. What do I smell down by those rocks? And they're gone. So the shepherd goes in search of the one lost sheep. Sheep are so stupid, we think. Yes, they are. And people are the same way, aren't we? We're unpredictable. We don't stay where we land. We don't stay where we're told to stay. We don't do what we're supposed to do, what we're told to do. We don't follow the path that we're told to follow. And after a few years of living like that, who knows where we might end up? God, because he cares about us, God has to go looking for us. And he does. He seeks us out where we are. He doesn't even make us come to him. He comes to us. We 21st century humans have gotten used to living in the moment. And because of this, it's easy to forget how we got to the place that we are in our lives. It's easy for us to forget that there's a whole long story made up of shorter stories and lessons learned, decisions made, things done wrong, things done right, good choices reinforced, poor choices almost ruining us. When we make a decision today, because we live in the moment, we've often forgotten the whole history of our lives leading us up to that point where we could even make that decision. Because of that, we're not able to appreciate the gravity of our decisions sometimes. We don't think to ourselves before deciding, what has my story looked like? What is my trajectory? Am I in this place on purpose or by accident? And should I do something about that, or should I just keep floating passively along wherever life takes me? Are you lost? Have you followed your nose too long? Need to be found? Back when our son Dan was about 6 months old, I went grouse hunting with a good friend of ours up in the UP. It was November. Lake effect snow fell off and on. My friend and I took off down an unused logging road. Pretty uncertain. We thought we were pretty certain of where we were going. We flushed a few grouse, examined a few skinned beaver carcasses, and eventually ended up at this distinctive-looking bog with a small pond in the middle. We decided to explore in a different direction. 20 minutes later, we were back at that same bog with the pond in the middle, and we looked at each other, puzzled. Okay, we said, let's try this direction. And we struck off at right angles to our original path. 30 minutes later, we were back at that same bog with the pond. Oh, come on, we exclaimed. That's impossible. Let's try this other road that goes the opposite way. But before long, I said, I think I recognize these trees and that granite outcrop over there. Sure enough, there we were, mysteriously standing by the same bog with the pond. This is freaky, we said. No kidding, it's like we're in an episode of The Twilight Zone or something. Eventually, my friend and I would refer to this phenomenon fondly as swamp suck. This kind of thing happens to us sinners all the time. We follow our noses and go off in a direction that appeals to us. Maybe it's a career path or pursuit of a relationship or a financial deal or building a house. It could be anything. And before we know it, we're not sure where we are. It's the same thing that keeps happening to us, and we keep ending up in the same place, no matter which new direction we try to start off on. How did we get there? God knows this about us. We can lose a sheep or a coin. We can lose glasses or a wallet. We can lose our car in a parking lot. I've done that many times. We can lose ourselves by following our nose instead of God's plan. And if we slip into a ditch along the way, it becomes impossible for us to see which direction is the right way to go. The two brief stories Jesus tells in our gospel lesson today are pretty straightforward. Both stories compare us human beings to a precious thing that is lost. And both stories point out that God goes after the precious item, and doesn't bother wasting his time with all those sheep or coins that haven't been lost and don't need to be found because they are in a good place already. The stories also point out specifically that it is sinners that Jesus came to save. The lost, the muddled, the befuddled, people that always seem to end up back in the wrong place no matter what they do. The swamp suck people, us. God seeks out one who is lost. We are lost ones to our precious Father. We are precious to Jesus, and he has literally dropped everything to come and find us. Jesus coming to save sinners seems like a no-brainer, but it's somewhat counterintuitive, because while we were yet sinners, Jesus came to live and die and rise for us. While we were yet sinners, he seeks us out. While we are still getting ourselves lost, he comes looking for us. Not to scold us, but to rejoice in being reunited with us, to throw us a party, to celebrate our reunited relationship. Notice that in both stories, that seeker who finds what they're looking for goes to his friends and relatives to tell them and rejoice with them. Well, how do you think they rejoiced back then? They threw a party. They enjoyed a big meal together. And what are the Pharisees all upset about? That Jesus parties with sinners. He eats with them. He's intimate with them, and he treats them like they're important, because he's busy finding those who are lost. And sometimes the lost don't really know that they're lost until they get found. There's no need for a big lecture about the sinning in Jesus' mind. He doesn't wait for us to stop sinning, to read a list of what we've done or not done before he eats with us. No, he eats with us while we are sinners. So we get a taste of the kingdom that we can be a part of when we are found. And then maybe that'll be motivation. We won't want to wander off again. I think too often we are obsessed with our sin. It's too important to us. We keep looking back at where we came from, dragging that dirty trail of mistakes and stupidity behind us, not being able to let go. Some of us even take a kind of pride in how messed up we are. A backward kind of arrogance, I guess. Jesus doesn't care about that. He just says, go and sin no more. What's done is done. Separate yourself from it and move on in the right direction with me. When God and a sinner are reunited after a life of separation, there's no long discussion about sinning and what should be done about it. It's the change of heart, the change of mind and direction that makes the difference. And once that happens, all that leads up to repentance, to the turning, doesn't need to be talked about anymore. If you have a child that's missing or lost for any length of time, you are so overjoyed at being reunited with them that you no longer care about how they got lost in the first place. To obsess about that is to pull yourself backward into the negative and to forget to be joyful. But here's the question. Once we are found, do we sometimes become like the Pharisees in the story? We can't stand those sinners, even though 5 minutes ago we were those sinners. Suddenly we're too good, and sinners disgust us. That's not Jesus' attitude. Do we rejoice with God in the turning of the one he has been earnestly seeking? Do we join in the search and in the caring? Or do we scorn sinners like Pharisees and wonder why God even cares about dirty, rotten, messed up people? How quickly we forget how much mercy we have received. Do we want to keep receiving mercy, or do we think we don't need it anymore? We must pass on what we receive. Mercy and grace and rejoicing in the lost is always more important than wasting a lot of time rehashing past sins. The past can never be relived, and trying to relive it cannot bring us anything good. I once had a grad student in my class who, among other things, was the choir director in his church. He talked about how there was a group of people in his choir that had threatened to quit because of the presence in the choir of a divorced man and a divorced woman who had begun dating each other. In this particular church, divorce was considered a sin and unacceptable for any reason. We've all experienced this kind of thing in one way or another. People who think they don't have any problems that are bad enough to separate them from God or from each other. These people tend to look down on other unfortunates who do seem to struggle with more difficult problems. Anyhow, this choir director said that the uppity people in his choir, as he called them, were threatening to quit because they did not think that sinners should be in the choir. I understood what he was saying, but I laughed, and I told him he should have said that that's the only kind of people he could find to work with. And see how they react to that. We should never come to church thinking it is a place where we can be rid of sinners. The church is full of sinners. Sinners who know they are sinners, hopefully. The church is where sinners belong. Sinners who have been found. Sinners who are still looking to be found. The sick belong in a hospital. And the church is a hospital. Pharisees looked down on Jesus for eating with sinners. I think it would be great if people would accuse us, Jesus' church, of doing the same thing, of welcoming sinners and eating with them. How great it would be if others were outraged that we did that. If people said that about us at Holy Trinity, it would be a good indicator that we're doing something right. That's the kind of scandal I don't mind being a part of. Sheep sometimes lose their way. Coins fall on the floor. We must always be ready to drop everything and go on a treasure hunt. That's what Jesus does. So let's look for some unexpected treasure. What better reason for a party?